Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
One of the things we need to do then is we need to simply stop them. And those in power are not going to stop burning oil and gas. And if we care about the planet, we need to stop them. And they're not going to stop putting in dams. They're still putting in dams all over the world. And, you know, we need to stop them. We, those of us of good heart. So one of the things I think we need to do, one of the first things, is we need to recognize, like I said early on, we need to recognize there is a problem. And then the next thing is to figure out what we want. And, you know, I've always been very clear with what I want. And what I want is for there to be more wild salmon every year than the year before and more migratory songbirds. And so I think we need to get really clear on what it is we want. And then we need to figure out, okay, what are the steps we need to get from point A to point B?
That's the voice of author and activist Derek Jensen. On this week's show, we finish our two-part series with Derek Jensen on the common sense and proactive approach to the environmental movement moving forward. Stay tuned.
One of the things that you mentioned was this idea of the form and the function. And so if you were to give this new movement of people who see the environment as the wilderness of our hearts, as the wilderness that we are, you know, the multiple possibilities that we co-create, how do we then, you know, enable that those functions to start to become generative and productive?
We will protect what we value, and we will protect what we love. And right now, what people love most and what people value most are these authoritarian techniques of, you know, they value the economy over the real world, and they value so-called human ingenuity over the real world, and they value television over the real world, and they value pretty much everything over the real world. And what they really value is their sense of superiority that is created by all those things. And one of the problems and one of the reasons we need a resistance movement is one of the central things of my work is, and I don't see many other environmentalists talking about this, is that the problems we face are not fundamentally rational. They're not reasonable. They're driven by unconscious motives. You know, I think about this in terms of abuse, you know, that raping anyone, but specifically let's talk about raping a child, is not a rational or reasonable act, you know? And poisoning your own water supply is not a reasonable act. And I talk about this in terms of pesticides, too. I mean, who's the genius who came up with the idea of putting poison on our own food? That's just nuts. And I think a lot about this line that was said about Hitler. This is a direct quote. From insane premise to monstrous conclusion, Hitler was coldly, icily logical. And so he took this insane premise that, in this case, Jews are subhuman and that Jews were victimizing the Aryan people. The Aryan people are a master race that need to get rid of these weeds. And, you know, if you accept that premise, then you're 90% of the way down the insane hole that he's going to drag you. And then everything else is just adding to it. And it's the same here, that if you accept these insane premises that all life is based on ruthless competition, or that only human creations matter, or that, and here's the thing that makes them even more so, and this is true for a lot of Hitler stuff, too, but it's certainly true for us, is that there's this great line of this guy, Robert Coombs, unquestioned beliefs are the real authorities of any culture. The things affect how you behave without you even thinking about them. Those are the real things that control. So if you're told again and again that, I mean, I think about this in terms of movies all the time, that there's so many movies, and they still exist, where, I mean, they're still making them, where a man starts to sexually assault a woman, And she says no and no and no. And then by the end of the scene, she's got her arms around him and she's pulling him close. And what that's telling people, both men and women, but especially men, is that no doesn't really mean no. But no, if you just keep pushing, she'll say yes. Mm. And so if that's what you're inundated with, then that's how you're going to perceive the world. And if you perceive the world that way, that's how you're going to act, especially if you don't question it. And it's the same whether we're talking about the thing to be saved is the economy, not the real world, or whether it's, you know, the abuse of women. It all comes down to these unquestioned assumptions that really guide our lives, which is why so many people say that the first and most important thing that we have to do is to decolonize. And that's another unquestioned assumption, is that it is sufficient to merely change one's lifestyle, but that's what resistance consists of, as opposed to resistance consisting of actually destroying the institutions that are inherently destructive and getting rid of the institutions that are harmful, changing those institutions when that's possible. You know, making functional change. You know, it doesn't really matter. We've talked about this before. It doesn't really matter how much water I personally use when there's more water used for municipal golf courses than used by municipal human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, mine's a drop in the bucket compared to the real use. 90% of water is used by agriculture and industry, and that's the real target. You know, when I believe that individual use of water, I'm making this up, but I think it's only like 4% of the total use, and total use by industrial humans. And here's how insane these things are, too. I interviewed this guy a couple weeks ago, Gary Walkner, who loves the Colorado River and wants to make it so it can once again reach the ocean, which it doesn't even reach the ocean. And right now he's fighting additional pipelines that are being built to take water away from the Colorado River, which is insane enough to build pipelines to take water away from the river. But what's even more insane is the Colorado River, 115% of the water in the Colorado is already allocated to be taken out. I'm going to say this again. They have allocated more than 100% of the water in the Colorado to be taken out.
It's disgusting.
And which is why it doesn't reach the ocean. And they're building more pipelines. Mm-hmm. That's just nuts. It's completely nuts. Mm-hmm. And that's once again a technique having taken over.
Just thinking about the interception, though, you know, because in many ways, our own relationship with water shapes our lens of possibilities, you know, how we understand the river. Is the river a sacred being? Or is the river simply a resource? You know, so if we have a relationship with water that is one of sacred coexistence, where we respect, you know, and we take only what we need, and we are aware of what we put, you know, into our pipes, into, you know, our sinks, that to me leads to a different relationship to, say, the gentleman I ran into yesterday. I was swimming at the lake with my dog, and this guy's coming across the lake swimming with this dog, which I thought, great, you know, he comes over. And so as he approaches us, you know, his dog got out, and he reaches into the bush where he had hidden a bottle of shampoo and just starts lathering his dog and washing it, you know. And so, and I said to him, excuse me, I said, but, you know, we all swim here. This is not your, and he said, oh, no, it's okay. I swim here too. But he doesn't even see the connection, right? Like if 20 people started going to the lake and, you know, washing their dogs there just because it's convenient to them and they don't want to, you know, do that in their tubs, which the water will then be treated and at least, you know, some of those chemicals will not be exposed to the water we're drinking. This is a lake where you're not allowed to have boats, where you're not allowed to have, you know, any kind of mechanized vehicles, because it is water that, it, you know, people drink from it. There is salmon, there is trout, you know, and there he is just washing his dog and assuming this is just right. So to me, it's interconnected. You know, I mean, we can't just say, it's just a golf course and what I do doesn't matter, because I think both are equally, you know, I mean, not, perhaps not equally, but they feed each other. You know, one, it's my right to do it. You know, you can't stop me. So to me, that leads us into this disconnection, right? This continuous disconnect of who we are and what our actions say about the world that we live in, and who do we recognize as being?
Oh, I don't disagree at all. And, you know, some people, you haven't done this, but some people have, I think pretty insanely, criticized my comments about, you know, the fact that it doesn't really matter whether or not you take a shorter shower in the larger picture. They've criticized that because they've said that I'm actually suggesting that we waste things. And that's not my point at all. My point is that if your total goal is just harm reduction, you may as well just kill yourself right now, because that's the way you'll do the least harm. But I actually think that humans can do good. And one of the ways we can do good is by rehabilitation. Another way is by stopping bad projects. I am obsessed with reusing scratch paper, and I don't... You know, all the books that I've done on my own personal use, when I print out the stuff, I go to the local college, and at the library they save their one-sided paper that they were just going to recycle and that's been printed on the other side. And I keep chatting with the librarian every time I go in and say, you know, wow, I've written 20 books on the paper that you give me, and I am under no illusions that actually stops deforestation in any way. And that's the real point, is that,
Exactly. Yeah,
of course we have to have. And I think about this, you know, I realized to my horror that aquifers are not just tanks of water, but they are living communities through their lakes. Mm-hmm. And they have natural communities. I don't use the word ecosystems anymore because it's machine language, and they're not machines. They're not, it's not a system. What it is, it's a community. And they have communities, so I'm not very happy with the fact that every time I shower, I'm sucking water out of the aquifer, which is sucking up the beings who were living there perfectly happily. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't alter the fact that I still take showers, but my point is that I'm aware of that, and it you know, I I kind of preferred when I just wanted to not use a lot of water, because then it would be, I wouldn't be draining the aquifer. But now, in addition, you know, it's I'm sucking them out. I'm sucking out the little beings who live down there, ineluctably, whenever I use that. And yes, that awareness I think is incredibly important. Which, by the way, if we were in a sane culture, we wouldn't be drawing the water up out of the aquifer that way. We would be washing in creeks. Mm-hmm. Because then the dead skin and everything else would become food for those in the creek. We would be actually contributing, if there weren't a bazillion of us, if there was, you know, a small enough number of us, that we would actually be contributing to the life of the river instead of taking it away. Mm. Another way that we're making some fundamental mistakes is in believing, and this ties to the whole competition thing for natural selection, is in believing that the individual, or even the, especially even worse, the gene is a fundamental unit of evolution. I'm becoming increasingly convinced that the fundamental unit of evolution, well, the word unit is wrong, but the fundamental unit of evolution is, the larger community, the forest or the river. And also, it's just very clear to me that they themselves are living beings, and we can look at, from the forest perspective, we can look at the river as like a blood system. You know, it's carrying nutrients in, and or a digestive system maybe. You know, except that those are both metaphors that just fall short, because what it is it's a river going through a forest, and the river brings in nutrients, and then it takes out nutrients. It takes out nutrients for others, and we can look at the different parts of the forest as different parts of the body. And it seems to me that's a much more accurate, a much more And this ties back to the whole teleology thing, because we understand that, you know, in our body, the pancreas has, you know, does something, and the stomach does something, and the small intestine does something. But then once again, when it comes to a forest, we forget that the dragonflies do something, and the newts do something, and that everybody does something that contributes to the forest.
So when we are creating this movement, to reimagine ourselves as, you know, being in coexistence with the earth, being interdependent with nature. You know, I was asked recently, we were organizing the People's Social Forum here in Canada, and one of the workshops was about creating a new movement on the left. And the question was, if we were to have a sacred symbol for a new movement, you know, let's say we picked an animal or a plant or a food, what would your animal be, and what specific characteristics about this animal will define our movement? And so I was for me anyways, I was thinking, well, it's interesting to pick one animal, you know, but that's the game. So my partner said, well, of course it will be a turtle, you know, because turtles are slow to move, they're not reactive, they're wise, they remember, you know, and they live forever. So they, you know, for hundreds of years anyways, the giant turtles can live for hundreds of years. And so there's this continuity, and yet there's this magnificent beauty and elegance about how they move and interact in ways that are non-destructive. And so assuming that we were creating, you know, this beautiful movement, and we were at that point, what would you, you know, imagine as our possible, you know, sacred symbol for our movement, and how would that define or maybe inform the ways in which we would organize and you know, invite each other to participate?
Well, I remember one time this was a long time ago, I was doing a talk up in Washington State. I think it was in Olympia. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it was Olympia. And this was really early in my career. And nowadays I'm just too tired to stay at people's houses. Nowadays I stay in hotels. But I stayed at somebody's house. And this person was, I don't remember which indigenous group they were associated with, which people they were. It's near Olympia, whoever's there. And they had this sculpture on their table that really moved me, and it was of a salmon being eaten by a it was a salmon feeding a sea lion feeding an orca, and all three animals were so intertwined that you couldn't tell where one began and the other ended. And it was, that for me was really, really moving and really, and pointed toward, I think, a way that I would like to perceive, and I think is important to perceive the world differently than we currently do, such that all of those, you can't take one without the other, just like, you know, just like the different body parts of yourself. And, you know, as we're talking, I've been standing outside, and I've been seeing, I don't know who they are, but these little birds, the huckleberries are on here, and these little birds have been flying around flitting is probably a better word. They've been flitting around in some of the thicker parts, and then they reach down and eat berries. And, you know, I've thought about that too, that, when I was thinking of wonderful inventions, you know, can you really think of a better invention than a berry? What a great idea. That what you do is you make this wonderfully attractive package for your seed that then somebody eats it, and they derive nourishment from them. It helps them, and then they fly away, and they poop out your seed, and so they transfer your seed somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but when they poop out the seed lands in a little pile of fertilizer. It's like, you know, I could think my whole life and I wouldn't come up with an idea that is that good.
Yeah.
And I want to say one more thing about something else along those lines that I was I was bored one night. I was stuck an extra day in a town after an event, and because the flight got canceled, and so I'm just bored sitting in the hotel, and I did what the internet is good for, which is, you know, basically bathroom reading material, just, you know, sitting there going, huh, so what can I look up to waste another 10 minutes? And I'd always wondered what snot is. And snot is, so I typed in, what is snot? It is the coolest stuff. It's such a great idea. But what snot is a, and I also wondered why sometimes kids eat it. You know, I was like, what's that about? And it ends up that snot is this, the mucous membranes are, the mucus is this sugary substance that is that is extruded by your body or put out by your body. And the purpose is that it makes this, and then it's also really full of water. So it's this complex chain of enzymes and sugars that if a virus starts getting in or a bacteria, it has to go through that. And your body is creating this thick stuff that is also the bacteria are eating, but at the same time, it's basically sticking them. It's like the La Brea tar pits. And so then you keep creating. They get put on this treadmill of that they can't actually get to your skin or to your body itself. And it's like, what a great idea to protect you from these various viruses. I mean, it's a brilliant notion, and you keep making it. And the upper lungs, it's like I was also reading that the mouth is the most, basically, except for some parts of the colon, the mouth is the most septic place in the body. And every time you breathe, you're breathing in all these bacteria and everything else from that are in your mouth. But you can't get those in your bloodstream. That's terrible. So it ends up that there's tons of mucus up in your upper lung, and by the time it gets down to the bottom, the air is sterile. Mm. Isn't that just a brilliant thing? It's like, I could never have thought of this stuff. And that's the thing that blows me away, is that, you know, people, there's this new movement that I just hate. It's been happening the last 20 years. It's incredibly stupid. It's the neo-environmental movement, and they basically say that the entire world is a garden, mm-hmm. and that, you know, basically they're saying that indigenous people manipulated their environment, which means it's okay for industrial civilization to, and as Charles Mann says, quote, anything goes. That's complete nonsense. That's like saying that just because two people have had a relationship and had sex, that means that it's okay for anybody to rape that woman. Mm-hmm. You know, it's which of course is a common defense of rapists, and it's mm-hmm. exactly the same thing. And it's also just nonsense. I love this line by David Ehrenfeld: mm-hmm. "Nature's not only more complex than we think; it's more complex than we can think." Mm. And you know, who knows what functions Huckleberry plays in this forest.
Yeah.
And who knows what functions these little birds play, and who knows all the different things they do. And anyway, that's another thing that just kills me, is the complete arrogance of this culture. It thinks it can kill the oceans and survive. I mean, it's just yeah. It's stunning to me. And I will, back to the whole notion of the problems not being fundamentally rational. One of the things that means is that they're not amenable to rational solution, which means one of the things we need to do then is we need to simply stop them. And those in power are not going to stop burning oil and gas. And if we care about the planet, we need to stop them. And they're not going to stop putting in dams. They're still putting in dams all over the world. And, you know, we need to stop them. We, those of us of good heart, so one of the things I think we need to do, one of the first things, is we need to recognize, like I said early on, we need to recognize there is a problem. And then the next thing is to figure out what we want. And, you know, I've always been very clear with what I want. And what I want is for there to be more wild salmon every year than the year before, mm-hmm. and more migratory songbirds. And so I think we need to get really clear on what it is we want. And then we need to figure out, okay, what are the steps we need to get from point A to point B? So I would say that right now the task of a resistance movement is A, figuring out your clear priorities, figuring out what it is you want, and then B, figuring out if what you want is possible. Like if what you want is industrial civilization and a planet too, I would suggest that you really need to think a lot because those are incompatible. I don't read reviews of my work very often. I did read this one review years ago that said something I really liked, which was the person called me almost pathologically unsentimental. One of the things that differentiates me from a lot of writers is that I try as hard as I can to let the analysis go where it needs to go, and I follow it even if it leads to conclusions that make me uncomfortable. And I don't want to end industrial civilization because I hate humans. I don't want to end it because I hate hot showers. I love hot showers. And I like the conveniences that we have. But me liking them does not mean that they're sustainable. And I recognize that these are conveniences that are killing the planet. You know, when I talk about all this, you know, I have Crohn's disease, and without modern medicines, I would be dead in a few months. And I fully recognize that when the system comes down, I'm dead. And the thing is, that's okay. Because what I want is for there to be a real world. And that's what's most important to me. It's like this guy wrote to me the other day and said this ridiculous stuff about if people follow my prescriptions and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, this is ridiculous because my first prescription that I always, always, always say is I want for people to learn how to think. And I want for them to learn how to feel. And I want for them to feel the enormity of the loss. And I also want for them to think clearly about our predicament. And so the first step for any resistance movement, I think, is for us to think clearly about the circumstances we're in. You know, it's people say so often, we have to stay really positive. We can't acknowledge how bad things are. And it's like, I go back to the doctor metaphor. You know, if somebody's dying of emphysema, you know, the first thing you do is acknowledge it. Or if somebody's killing themselves through alcoholism, the first thing is you have to acknowledge that. And then once you acknowledge that, it's like, then we can move on. But until you acknowledge it, you can't move on.
Yeah.
You can't actually start solving things. If you think the problem is not your alcoholism, but the problem is, you know, your next door neighbor. Your problem is that somebody is thwarting you, you know, whatever excuses you have to maintain the alcoholism.
Yeah.
And so the first thing we need to do is figure out what we want, and then we need to think clearly about what we want. We need to think clearly about how we get from where we are to what we want, and then we need to start, we need to recognize that the problems are so big, we can't do this all this by ourselves. We need to do it collectively. The next point is to organize, except there's an asterisk on that, because one of the great things about everything being so messed up is no matter where you look, there's great work to be done, and different people work differently in different ways. I'm a terrible organizer, so I say people need to organize, and I support organizations that I agree with, but, you know, I'm such an introvert that my job is to write, and that's what I love doing, and, you know, it can be physically painful for me to spend too much time with people. I know other people who are really good at that whole extrovert thing, you know, that thing, and they can do that. But we need to organize. We need to work together. And then we need to move forward. I mean, that's basically the short version of the resistance. Well, thank you so much for all that you do. You're fabulous. And I want to say that I agree. When I said unsentimental, I did not mean unemotional. I see a big difference, you know, sort of a sentimental attachment to something that can be kind of maudlin. And here's another thing is, yes, I actually do have attachments, but my attachments are to salmon, to forest, to redwood trees, to the living planet. I think we desperately, desperately, desperately need to reattach to them.
Thank you again for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much.
Take care. We have come to the end of our program. Latin Ways is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwaysmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources.